Hey, it's Kristen Carney, your second favorite sad person, because you should be your first favorite sad person. Welcome to another episode of the Mentally Chill podcast. So a friend of mine texted me this morning with an article about Arnold Schwarzenegger pumping someone up on Reddit to get out of their depression and into the gym. So I'm going to read you the little exchange between Allie, the Reddit user, and the Terminator, also known as now the Depression Terminator. So she wrote, "I know this is pandering, but I've been depressed for months and haven't hit the gym during that time. Mr. Schwarzenegger, can you please tell me to get off my lazy ass and hit the gym? I swear to everything that I hold dear, I will snap out of it and go." Allie sounds like me. She's calling herself lazy. You're not lazy, you're depressed. But anyway, Schwarzenegger responds, and I'm going to read that to you. Obviously, it would be so much better if it was read in his amazing accent. It's not going to be. I'm not going to embarrass myself and even try. So I'll just read you what he wrote. He said, "I'm not going to be that hard on you. Please don't be that hard on yourself. We all go through challenges. We all go through failure, except me, of course." He didn't say that, but I put that in there for him. "Sometimes life is a workout, but the key thing is you get up. Just move a little. Roll out of bed and do some push-ups or go for a walk. Just do something. One step at a time. I hope you feel better and get back to the gym. But don't beat yourself up, because that's just useless talk. It doesn't get you closer to the gym. And don't be afraid to ask for help." So that was lovely what he said. But my favorite part is the last line when he said, "Good luck." I love that. That's so funny to me. It's like saying, I mean, maybe this isn't the best analogy, but it's like, you know, saying to a cancer patient, "So you're going to treatment today? Well, good luck with that. I hope you survive. And you get rid of that nasty lump pretty quick. So yeah, good luck." But it was really cool of Arnold. I call him Arnold because we're on a first name basis. But it was really cool of him to do that. And then he continued the dialogue. So I'm going to play for you a little video that he posted after. And just a heads up, there is wretched gym music playing, like crazy techno music in the background. It's pretty funny. So anyway, I'm going to play that for you right now.
"You asked me to pump you up a little bit about your depressions. I'm very happy that you snapped out of it and that now you're pumping up other people that have depressions and encourage them and give them positive reinforcement. I love that. Hasta la vista."
So the only thing worse than having depression is having depressions. That's just too much depression. But anyway, that's Mr. Arnold, the Depression Terminator. And on today's show, I have my friend and beauty photographer, Hannah Kimmich, on talking about how she didn't leave her apartment for a month because she had crippling anxiety that turned into depression, and how she has captured herself on camera having some really dark, awful moments and going through some terrible depression and what she wants to do with it and all sorts of cool things, including lots of F-bombs. Just a heads up. But before you get to the goods, you know the deal, Patreon. Hey, Patreon people. Thanks for all the new pledges this month. I got really good donations this month from Amy, Liz, Eleanor, and Eric. Thank you so much for joining the Patreon community. And if you guys are on Patreon or want to join Patreon, all you have to do is throw at least $2 a month at it, and you can join me tomorrow, Friday, August 24th, for a live stream on there. I'll be doing it at 7 p.m. Eastern, 4 p.m. Pacific time, and I'll be chatting with anyone who wants to join. So please come to that. That's patreon.com/mentallychill. I so hope to see you there. But if I don't, I hope to see you throwing me a nice little 5-star rating or review on iTunes. The more reviews on iTunes, the higher the podcast gets pushed up. And so then I appear to more people searching for shows about mental health. And that would be so helpful. So if you have a quick second, please do so. And that's it for me. So please enjoy this week's show. I said, "Is there anything you want to talk about?" And you said, "I've got this problem, this problem, this problem, this problem, and this problem." And in any other scenario, people would go, "Oh, I'm so sorry." But I was like, "Yes, this is so good for my show." And then, of course, obviously, I feel bad once we stop recording.
But I got categories on categories. We can talk about whatever you want.
That's perfect, because yeah. I'm running out of content. So you, to me, are just a library of content. I just walked into the New York Public Library.
Perfect.
Well, so we're recording in New York, mm-hmm. which is the first episode. No, I actually have recorded episodes here before when I was visiting. So I was going to say you're christening my experience in New York for podcasting, but you're not. You're one of my many lovers, but still a good one.
Yeah.
So you had a month where you didn't leave your apartment.
I mean, I would leave to go to the corner deli, which is like 50 feet away, just to get coffee. But like, I literally would not even get out of bed.
I thought you just were about to say, I would leave to go to the corner. And I'm like, well, that's probably why you didn't want to leave your apartment, because the only place you were going was where dead bodies are.
No. But it was such a weird experience. It's like when my social anxiety, I guess, got so bad to the point where even getting a cup of coffee was like a chore.
But why? What made it feel scary outside?
I don't know. It's, my anxiety kind of comes and I wake up with anxiety, right? Racing heart rate, all that fun stuff. And one day I was like, I just don't want to deal with it. And like every time I left my house, I'd be like, oh my God, I'm going to have a panic attack and nobody's going to give a fuck. And I'm going to literally just pass out and die. And like, that's how I'm going to go. And that's where it started. It's just like putting all these negative thoughts inside my head. And just after, I don't know, like a couple of months of just like dealing with that inside my head, I was like, I don't want to deal with it. And, you know, being a freelancer, it's so easy to just stay in your apartment. You don't have to go anywhere.
It's the worst if you tend to want to be isolated or you tend to be an introvert and then you're doing that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So I would like, you know, you can Postmate and Seamless and like Drizzly your alcohol and like do whatever the hell you want. And you like, you don't have to essentially leave. Like,
there's so many enablers.
Yeah. It's like back in the day, you know, my mom sometimes tells me, she's just like, just go outside, just go for a walk. And like, even that to me was so scary. Like, I'd go to the park by myself and I don't know, sweaty palms, didn't want to be there.
Did you have any feeling like people were judging you?
All the time.
That was my only, I have some social anxiety in terms of like, it takes me a lot of energy to be social. And once I'm done being social, I feel exhausted mentally, but I don't normally get the panicky, sweaty palm feeling. But one time I was in H&M and I just got my license. So it was the first time I could really drive anywhere on my own. And I'm from a small town, so that you can't walk anywhere. So for the first time in my entire life, I was going to the mall alone as like my own person. And I got into H&M and I was standing in line and I felt like everyone was looking at me like, who is this person? Why is she here? She shouldn't be here. She doesn't belong here. And back then, I mean, H&M was like so cool. And I was like, I'm not cool enough for H&M. They all know. And the walls just started closing in on me, and then I didn't really feel much of that again. So do you ever have that experience?
Oh yeah, well, so I was just in Scotland and
okay, stop bragging.
Well, you know, I'm a world traveler with all my so anxieties.
Jealous. Yeah, you're like, I don't leave my house, but I go to Scotland.
You know what, actually, whenever I travel, when I'm in a different country, my anxiety is way less.
It's like a different energy. It's you can check out of being you, I think, for a few minutes or something when you're traveling.
Well, but also I feel like I was in Germany as well. And when I was staying in Germany, I literally had zero anxiety, which is so bizarre to me.
No one in the history of planet Earth has ever said that about being in Germany.
Well, maybe because you could just like crack a beer open and walk around. And I think a lot of it is like, I do sometimes tend to just be like, I'll just have a couple of beers and like to calm myself down. And, you know, that 1 month that I was just inside my apartment, that's how I medicated myself. It was like before I decided to go on antidepressants.
You were drinking that much?
Oh, yeah. Like, my diet consisted of a coffee, a banana, and a six pack every day.
And you ended up with a six pack because you look great.
Oh, thank you.
You do. I mean, you're so...
I was much skinnier back then, to be honest with you. I literally looked like malnourished.
I'm
sure you did. It was so gross. And like my parents, because my parents live in New York, and they would be like, oh, come over for barbecue or whatever. And I was just like, I'm so busy with work. Really, I can't make it.
Was it because you were avoiding food or avoiding leaving the apartment?
Avoiding leaving the apartment. It wasn't really the food.
There was no eating disorder.
No.
Okay. I wasn't sure if there was. We could add that to the list.
I mean, shit. I've always had body dysmorphia issues, I guess is what they call it. But no, it was never the eating. Not at all. It was just kind of like, you know, my parents come from a different generation, I'm sure, just like yours. And they just don't get it. Like, to them, my mom will make jokes and she's like, oh yeah, what, you're gonna just chill in your apartment all day because of that depression that you have? And I'm like, why? Yes, I am. But like, she doesn't get it. And you know, like working in the photo industry, it's a lot of just like fake, you know, everything's beautiful, everything's perfect, everything's this, everything. And you know, you have to
drive me so insane.
You know, there's so much pressure to always be on top. It's always like, you do an editorial for a certain magazine and it's like, what's next? And the next has to be bigger and better. And it's really exhausting. And, you know, I remember when I first got into it and it was like, you are just as good as your last photo shoot. And like that inside your head and all that pressure from like, you know, when you're on set and you're in charge of like 20 people, and on top of being in charge of all these people and the creative, you also have to do your job. And I think that's where it all really started, is when I, you know, transitioned from retouching into photography. All of a sudden, it was like, it sucks to say, but more money, more problems, almost.
Totally. That's why I have no problems.
You know, I don't have the money, but I have all the problems. But when I was staying in my apartment, I was talking to my friends and stuff. And every time they would invite me out, I would just be like coming up with some sort of excuse not to go. My deli guy was like, dude, like you only come in to like have a coffee. Like, what's up? Is everything okay? Like, you were always here and all of a sudden you're not. You know, when you have the same deli guy for 7 years, you kind of become best friends.
You know you're in New York when you have a deli guy.
Yeah.
And how sweet of him. That's nice of him to notice. And we live in a world where people aren't paying attention for the most part.
I mean, I'm literally looking at apartments around my deli guy.
That's amazing.
He has
my
heart.
Does he know this information?
Yes, he does.
Wow. He must have some pretty good meats.
Well, I don't eat meat, but...
The irony in this. Okay.
The egg and cheeses are...
Oh, okay, so you're not vegan.
Perfect. No.
Okay.
I did that for 6 months, and then I was really craving mac and cheese, and I always said, fuck it.
Yeah.
I want cheese in my life.
Of course.
Yeah.
Living is so hard as it is. You just make it so much harder.
Don't add extra pressure to yourself.
Ignorance
just
is bliss. Just pretend nothing bad happens.
Yeah.
So when you were staying in your apartment, what were you actually doing all day? Because you went and got coffee, that meant you needed energy. For some things, were you doing your photo retouching or were you literally just laying?
Well, I would just lay in bed and obviously have my laptop. I'd watched a lot of Netflix, a lot of HBO. I think I rewatched the entire 8 seasons of The Sopranos.
Oh.
Yeah. Like, it was just like in the background on the rerun. And
it sounds like a nice vacation. And I know that's not the truth.
I know. But then there would be a lot of like mornings when I would wake up and I would just be like, you need to do something with your life. Like, you don't deserve all this free time to yourself. And, you know, and maybe that's what sucks about being freelancing, is like you have to force yourself to work. So I literally was just like, no, not today, not today. And then like it would come to like 4 or 5 p.m. and I'd be like, well, the day is gone. Fuck it. Going back to sleep.
I'll start tomorrow. And then you won't start tomorrow. So it's kind of this circle of lying to yourself. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. And then I finally, I think this is why my last relationship ended, is because my ex-boyfriend was just like, I can't deal with you anymore because you're literally are just like the darkest cloud in the sky. Like, it's too much pressure on me to be dealing with someone that literally doesn't want to do anything. And it's not that I wasn't doing anything. Like, I was emailing people about work and like trying to set up meetings.
Emailing is hard.
It sucks. But it's like, you know, my entire career is email and phone. And that's another problem. It's like, I can do that from anywhere. So it just helps my depression, I guess, to like just stay inside. And then I think when I got into a really huge fight with my ex-boyfriend and he was just like, dude, like you gotta get up. You gotta do something with your life. Like, this isn't okay. It's like when I went and like saw a psychiatrist and like got on medication, and I told him what was happening, and he was just like, yeah, like that's not okay. You shouldn't be feeling that way.
Were you staying inside because it was a depression thing or an anxiety thing, or the anxiety brought on the depression? Like, it's a chicken and egg scenario kind of thing. Which one was first?
Anxiety, right? So I had the anxiety. I stopped taking the train. I would like Uber everywhere because I was just like, don't want to deal with it. And then, you know, like one thing led to another. Like, I would only go out after I would have a couple of beers because it like, you know, suppressed my anxiety. And it was just like this like ongoing cycle of just like abusing alcohol and dealing with my life, but not really dealing with it, but kind of just like putting it under the rug and being like, everything's fine, it's fine, you know. And then I finally went and like saw a doctor, and I've been seeing him for the last, I don't know, year and a half. And it's gotten better. Obviously, I'm leaving my place. Taking the train is still a struggle, which sucks because like, holy shit, there's like people that have actual problems. And like, I'm here living in one of the greatest cities in the world. And I'm just like, oh, getting on the train sucks. I really don't want to do it.
It does suck, though.
It does. It's terrible.
Don't deny yourself of those human feelings of like, ugh, it's not a fun experience. So I wouldn't beat yourself up about that. So are you now on medication for depression?
Yeah. So I went through three different ones when I first started. The first one I took was Celexa, and that gave me the worst side effects, like shaking, trembling, worse anxiety, like to the point where I nearly went to the hospital because I was like, what is happening? What the fuck?
Wow. How long were you on that for?
Like 4 days.
Wow, that's it?
And I called my doctor. And it sucks because I have a lot of friends that are on it. The fashion industry is so bougie. We're all on antidepressants.
If you're not, you can't get a job in it.
Pretty much. So then I can't remember the other one that I went on right after. So then after that one, it didn't really work. I think I took it for 2 months and I was just sweating like crazy at night. Like I would wake up and was like, what the fuck?
That
like,
was me on Effexor. I would wake up in a puddle, and I never sweat normally. When I work out, my body actually doesn't sweat. I don't know if there's a terminology for it, but when I was a kid, I went to a doctor, and the doctor said, you don't sweat through your sweat glands, really.
That's what I have. Like, the only time I'll sweat is, like, hot yoga.
Right. And so it has to be an extreme circumstance for me to sweat. Otherwise, my face just turns as bright red as a tomato. Like, pale. I'm just a nerd tomato. Like, bright red face, super pale body. But when I would take the Effexor, I would wake up probably about three times a week with the most incredible, intense sweats of saltine water.
Yeah. So then I went on Zoloft, and I was on it for 6 months, and it really, really helped. And then I don't know what happened. I think I went into this like weird state of mind where I was like, why do I need to take medication to feel better? You know, like
the medication gets you too big for your britches. It's like the medication should say,
side effect, you'll get big headed.
Yeah, you're here because of me, bitch. Like, the reason you feel okay right now is because of me.
Yeah. So I completely quit. Like, didn't tell my doctor.
Bad patient.
Sorry. I know. He's probably not going to listen to this. It's okay. So I completely quit.
He's busy
quit.
Doctoring.
Yeah. And I went to LA, and I was in LA by myself for a week.
And you were like, give me all the antidepressants.
No. And I had no anxiety. Like, I didn't have anything. And I think maybe it was like being on the beach, meeting all these new people. I mean, I like met with celebrities and stuff for like work purposes. Had no anxiety, which to
me. Oh, yeah. I remember saying, when were you going to meet me? Because you met Kim Kardashian.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And then I was like, oh, well, then clearly I'm the next celebrity you're going to meet.
Yeah, totally. So
you go from big to bigger.
Yeah. Sorry, Kim.
Yeah.
So then I was off of it. For 3-4 months. And I recently restarted it. And because that's the only one that's helped me before.
Was it the anxiety that came back, or was it the depression?
It was the depression, not so much the anxiety. It was like some days, you know, I didn't want to get out of bed. Some days I was just like, fuck, like I have to go on set and shoot. And like, I'm not saying that in like a braggy, annoying way.
Yes,
it's more, yeah, totally. But it was more of like, I just really don't want to be around people and I don't want to deal with them. That started fucking with my work. And I was like, no.
Yeah, because
like
you shoot people, not still life faces.
And exactly.
Even though models can be kind of still lifey.
I don't know.
Like dead inside, kind of.
I mean, I wish that my job would be much easier.
That's true.
You know, because a lot of them have really big personalities and then you have to deal with that and the ego and the, I have 1.2 million followers on Instagram.
Ew, vomit.
Like, fuck you. Like, nobody cares, okay? Yeah. Like, just because you have all these millions of people following you doesn't mean shit, honey. Like,
our reality is so altered right now with the internet. It just gives you such a false sense of self.
Yeah.
And I saw these girls out recently who looked like Instagram models, which on Instagram looks...
Like so like hot. Caterpillar eyebrows and yeah, thin waist, big ass.
Yep. Perfectly done makeup and their lips were really big. And I realized it was a wake up moment for me. Not that I ever see that and want it, but when you see it on Instagram, it seems kind of normal because that's the environment in which it lives. So it's normal within context. But when you take it out of context, the way they look and you put it into real life, and you put it somewhere mundane, it's like, you look absurd. You look so ridiculous.
Yeah.
And it's like, almost like they look alien-like, but they see themselves as looking amazing, but it gives them this false sense of self, and then it makes things for you more difficult, because you then have to deal with that personality.
Well, here's the thing. Instagram ruined the whole entire industry, right? And I say that because I've literally lost jobs because I don't have over 50K followers on Instagram.
I know.
There's certain companies, I won't say the names of them, but there's literally certain companies that in their contract for models or photographers, they will be like, if you don't have X amount of followers, we cannot work with you.
I hate them. They are the devil incarnate. Like, they are perpetuating the worst world ever.
Yeah, but you would be surprised how many of them there are. So
oh, I'm sure.
Many.
I'm sure. And that's what I feel like the devil is. It's like he can just put all of his tentacles onto everything and just create this monster.
But you know what I say to that is, I want to see how many followers the creative director of that company has.
12.
Probably like 900.
Right.
You know, and it's like,
So what do you say to the question of, okay, this is the reality. So instead of us bitching about it, how do we then deal with it?
Well, I think the best thing for me is I unfollowed a lot of those people. And I think it's really important to just focus on yourself. Because the more that you do the, you know, look at other people and what they're doing, it's, you fall into such a deep hole. It's like one of those things with my career path is something I fight with every day.
Oh, same, for sure. Actually, on Jimmy Kimmel, they used to have a National Unfriend Day on their show. Like, it was like once a year, and it would just be like, unfriend somebody you don't want to be friends with on Facebook. And I think that's so important.
Yeah.
And I really feel like that should become a national holiday for all of our own sanity. So if there's somebody that you're following that makes you feel bad about yourself, unfollow that person. But I have on my other show, my co-host Marnie say all the time, no one makes you feel a certain way. You are allowing that energy to affect you. You have to be strong enough to not allow it. And that's so difficult. So I'm not saying to avoid everybody and unfriend everybody that makes you feel bad, like meh. But there does hit a point where you have to start having some self-respect that certain things are negative and they need to be cut out of your life.
I did a full Instagram cleaning a couple months ago. I think I unfollowed over 700 people. I was like, fuck it.
Did it feel good?
Oh, yeah. I was like, don't talk to you anymore. Don't need you in my life. Don't care what you're doing. Don't care what you're eating for brunch.
You can take the power back by doing that.
I felt great.
I just felt like Oprah saying that.
Yes.
You
can get a
car. You get an unfollow. You get an unfollow.
Yes.
I love bread. That was for, you probably don't know the commercial, but that was for people who remember the Oprah bread commercial. Anyway, it wasn't for bread. It was for a weight loss thing. But anyway. Okay. The transitioning from anxiety to depression interests me because I didn't start my depression that way. I started out just down and sad. And I think the anxiety came afterward. So why are you left over with the depression?
Well, I think that it all started when I was in a very long-term relationship with someone. And it was a very mentally and physically abusive relationship. And I think, to be honest with you, my anxiety started a long, long time ago. Because I remember even in class, like in high school, whenever teachers would like ask me to like read out a paragraph or like go to the board or have to present to the class, it was a nightmare. But I think my first ever panic attack was after I dumped this asshole, right? Because he like cheated on me, broke my arm.
Yeah. Usually it's like there's a chance of a broken heart in a relationship, but you're not really thinking there's going to be a chance of a broken arm.
Honestly, I'll take a cast for 9 months over a broken heart.
Really?
Oh, yeah. Obviously. That was my first ever, like, real, real relationship. I was in it for 4 fucking years. Way too fucking long. We also had a 10-year age gap. So I was 18. He's 28. And he was a very good manipulator. Very, very, very good at it. That's his profession, really. And after I left him... By the way, I've never seen anyone cry like that. When I dumped his ass, he literally was a damn mess.
Yeah, and it was probably because of the loss of control over you. But oh, yeah. The fact that he didn't conquer.
I mean, we both were terrible to each other in a way. But I think I was just acting out as a teenager because I didn't know how to deal with it. And I would have tantrums where I would cry and I was like, why are you doing this to me? And like, what did I do to deserve this? And he just was like... You're a shitty fucking person. You're terrible. You're this, you're that, whatever.
But there's shitty people in prison who aren't getting their arms broken.
Yeah, exactly. It's that happened. And it was so fucked because I'm in the hospital and I call my parents in the morning after I got out from the emergency room. And the first thing my mother asked me was, did he do it? She knew. And I just said, no, I was drunk. I fell down the stairs. And that was my story for a very long time.
You need to get more creative. That one's been used 5,000 times.
I know. Yeah. It took me a very long time. It wasn't until like 2 years ago, I went back to therapy and I was talking to my therapist and I was like, can I tell you things that have been on my shoulders for years now that I haven't told anyone?
Like, that's why I'm here.
And
yes,
she was like, well, that's why you're paying me $200 an hour. So yes, please. And I told her, and I was the first person I ever told. And her first advice was, you have to go see your parents and you have to tell them right away. And I couldn't do it face to face. I had to do it over the phone because I was like, there's no way I can look my mom in the eye and be like, by the way, this fucking relationship I was in that you told me to get out of a very long time ago, it was very physically and mentally abusive. So what happened was, whatever, we break up, right? I dump his ass. He moves out. And the first month that I was living alone in that apartment, I woke up in the middle of the night sweating with a racing heart. And I was like, what the fuck is happening? Am I having a heart attack right now? And I'm like, do I tell my neighbor? Do I call 911? What is happening? And I think I walked around my apartment for 3 hours aimlessly. And then I called my mom in the morning and I was like, hey, I don't know what's happening. I think I'm having a panic attack because I Googled it, obviously. And she was like, well, you had just gotten out of a really stressful relationship. So I think it's just your body trying to like deal with all the anxiety that's been bundled up inside you for the last 4 years of your life. Because I had no anxiety when I was with him. And I think everything that was happening in our relationship, it was just kept inside. So when you know, we broke up, it was like, boom. So yeah, that's kind of how it started. It started with all the anxiety, and because I was so anxious, and it fucked with my career. It really did. Like, I didn't work for 7 months and just lived off of my savings. And that's when the depression hit, because I was like, now I'm sad because I'm not working. And like, never had to deal with that in my entire life.
I feel like you can blame it all on, well, obviously the start of it with the trauma from the relationship, but the isolation. I just think isolation is so bad for our brains.
It's terrible.
I'm not even somebody with a big imagination.
Yeah.
But if I'm alone and I don't really have enough to keep my mind busy, my anxiety and my depression spins out of control. Mm-hmm. And I've noticed, I mean, I've only been back on the East Coast for a week and a half.
Right.
And it's gone down drastically.
Really?
I think because I've had enough to occupy my brain with family and friends and activities that mm-hmm. it's been at bay. I know it's not gone, but it does help suppress it. Suppression is not a good thing, but at least it bides your time.
But you told me, I know we exchanged a couple of text messages, and you told me that you never really had terrible anxiety. It was always a depression.
The depression was always worse, mm-hmm. and then it turned into anxiety. My anxiety really started, I mean, I know I said I had that thing in high school when I was driving for the first time and got to go to the mall alone, but
yeah.
My anxiety really started when I started doing stand-up comedy. Because I suddenly felt this pressure to succeed and to have output of a product of myself. And I never felt competent enough to get that product to the place it should be. And I always felt like I was hateable and not funny enough. And so all of a sudden, I was trying to be something that I felt like I really couldn't be. And so it created this thunderstorm within my mind, I think. And that's when my anxiety started, because as I started doing stand-up, that's when I started waking up with butterflies in my stomach. Mm-hmm. And I've basically woken up with butterflies or a racing heart every single morning since I started stand-up comedy about like 12 years ago.
Well, I'm looking forward to it for the next 12 years. Because it's happening every morning.
Oh, every morning. Without fail, I wake up with that feeling. And it does subside a little bit through the day, because I don't have an anxiety about, like, you know, going to the store anymore. You know, I don't have anxiety about those things, but it's always this underlying thing of not being enough and not doing enough and not achieving enough. And I'm hitting the point now, I think because I'm in my mid-30s, you start to accept what is and what is not, and you start to realize what is important and what is not. And I'm in no way discouraging your amazing career. I've hit the point where before I would have looked at what you do mm-hmm. and thought, wow, that's so amazing. She's like taking pictures of like famous people and all this very fancy romanticized stuff. But mm-hmm. now because I'm 35, I look at it and I go, oh shit, that looks
that's
like
a lot of pressure.
A lot of pressure yeah. that I don't want. I have no desire to have anymore. I am like, you know what? I'm cool. Just hanging out on my own and not worrying about, like you said, making the next photo shoot better than the next one and the next one and the next one. I'm so over that life that it feels good to go, oh, I don't want that, even though I think it's amazing what you do.
Yeah. I mean, I think at some point in my career, because I've dedicated already 10 years of my life to it, I think at some point in my career, I want to wake up and just be like, I don't give a fuck. Like, if you don't like me, fuck yourself.
You will, like, hit a point. I think that's the beauty of getting older.
Yeah. And you know what? Even today, whenever I go on set and I might get anxiety in the morning and then I start shooting and then people are like, you actually know what the fuck you're doing. That gives me some sort of confidence to like keep on going. But if I didn't have those people around me, fuck, every job would just be a nightmare.
I don't know how people do it. I see like the fashion industry and it's just this constant competition of trying to belong and to outdo. And I think some people are built for that and some people just aren't.
Here's the best way to describe my industry is it's a big old high school. There's different groups of people. Yeah. You know, even in high school, I never belonged to like the cool kids or the artsy kids or whatever. I kind of bounced around from different circles. And in my industry, like I bounce around. Like I don't have a certain, oh, I only hang out with these people, or like I only go and have dinner with these people. It's always just like I can talk to someone that's like 30 years older than me or someone that's 18 and like it'll be the same conversation. And it sucks because there's definitely like circles, very, very tight.
It's the same in comedy.
Oh yeah, I'm sure. High school. But you know what I was gonna say is like I can't imagine like going up on stage and having to make hundreds of people laugh.
Well, if you're booking good shows, then you can worry about the hundreds of people. The worst part is going and doing a shitty show where there's like six people. That's worse. I would rather do a show in front of 400 people than three people or six people any day.
Well, yeah, because when you go out on stage, you see three people and you're like, fuck.
Yeah, and why? I always think that there's the idea of performing up to the level that you're around. So if I do a show that's at a bigger venue with more people, I instantly in my mind feel more legitimate. Mm-hmm. Therefore, my confidence changes, my energy changes, and the set will ultimately go better. If I'm at a shitty show and there's four people, I just think I'm the worst. That's why I'm here. That's why I'm doing a show with four people.
Yeah.
And my jokes are going to suck because they do suck. Mm-hmm. Your mentality totally changes and it creates your reality.
But you're your worst critic, right?
Oh,
it's always like that.
Yeah. I hope I'm my worst critic. I hope there's no one else that hates me more than I hate me. Because they would, that would mean they hate me so much.
I don't think that's possible.
I don't think so either. And logically, I'm like, okay, no one can.
I mean, I fucking hate you. We just met.
Well, okay. You know I hate me because I came here eating ranch Doritos. This is self-hatred in a bag.
As I'm drinking fucking cheap-ass whiskey. But yes.
But Doritos, they're like for people who want to still feel pleasure but also hate themselves. That's what Doritos are.
Do Doritos give you pleasure?
Yes, but also then I hate myself.
Like sexual pleasure or just like...
Yes, they're all in my vagina. Can't you see that they're... No, not sexual pleasure.
Kristen is literally sticking Doritos in her vagina right now.
I mean, I am in a long-distance relationship, so... You know, Doritos might have to take the place for a little while. And you know what? They do a pretty good job.
Where does
they're pointy.
How?
They're salty.
Where does your boyfriend live?
He's on the West Coast. Okay. So we'll, he's going to move to New York eventually, but.
No pressure, boyfriend.
A lot of pressure. I actually sent him a picture this morning because I'm here.
Of your Dorito vagina.
Well, they're over my
good
boobs
morning.
Too. Yeah. It's the trifecta, the two boobs and the vagina.
Perfect.
The Dorito trifecta. No, I sent him pictures.
Tom Ford, don't steal that ad.
See, just constant competition.
Yeah.
My friend's getting married. And so this morning before I came over here, we went to this bridal shop. And so I sent a picture of
a wedding dress.
Not in it, but I had the hanger of it over my head. So
with
it
like
draped.
I'm ready.
Yeah. And I just said, I thought I would wake you up with the scariest image you've ever seen.
Right.
And, you know, so anyway, but... So this is where I say I go off topic and I'm like, got to get back on track.
No, it's fine.
Okay. So you are currently on what now for your depression?
Zoloft,
right. So what does your depression feel like? Like, give me, if you were to write a very colorful, well, not that depression is colors. It's
I don't
more
do
black
color.
And white. Right. I can tell by your style. You're
black.
So badass. Yeah.
Black is my color.
So what does it feel like if you had to paint a picture of it for an article in a newspaper? What would the descriptors be?
Okay. Do you know the song by Ludwig Beethoven, Moonlight Sonata?
Oh, jeez, you're so pretentious. Ludwig Beethoven? yeah, I know the movie Beethoven and the dog. Yeah.
Oh, yeah, that's a good movie. I love that movie.
Yeah, yeah.
That was actually how I learned how to speak English.
Is it really?
Well, that movie and also...
well, you didn't learn very well because you're over there going, Ludwig Beethoven. No, I'm just kidding.
I'm still in the Paris. No, I'm just kidding. So I would say that song probably.
The da-na-na-na.
Yeah. No.
Oh, which one?
It's just
that's Beethoven, right, though?
Yeah, that is.
Oh, wow. I'm so sophisticated.
Yes, bitch. Welcome back to New York.
Thank you.
I feel like that song probably describes my depression the best.
How does it go? Which Beethoven
it's,
one?
I can't.
Did you say the name of it? Did I miss?
Moonlight Sonata.
Oh, I thought it was Moonlight Sonata.
Or Sonata.
Oh my God.
I'm not from America.
Okay, that is the best that we got the pronunciation of Moonlight Sonata.
Sonata. Frank Sinatra.
That is the best thing I have ever heard. That needs to be in a movie or something.
I actually really want to do a documentary about depression. Have you seen 32 Pills, My Sister's Suicide?
No.
Ooh, HBO. It's really fucking good.
Okay, so then right now we'll do a quick schizophrenia. So what's it called again?
32 Pills, My Sister's Suicide. I'm like a huge documentary is probably my favorite genre of movies, films, whatever the fuck you want to call it.
It's my favorite Sinatra.
Yeah. And
I'm kidding.
I love my Sinatra.
Tell me about the documentary.
Well, here's the thing. So when I first started getting depression, I started filming my breakdowns on my photo booth.
That's kind of cool.
Like,
kind of fucked up.
Four years ago, I started filming me all of my breakdowns. Like, I would be in a bathtub just crying, just talking to myself, for myself, for like 45 minutes.
I want to put this on the Patreon page.
Oh my God, I can send you one of them. Just they're like great.
2 minutes.
Dude, they're fucking great. I actually shared it with one of my closest friends like last year for the first time ever. And he was like, if you don't fucking make a movie, like a documentary about this, like you're fucking up. So that's where the whole thing came from, is because I literally have over 10 hours of footage of just like me having mental breakdowns, wow, different parts of my life. Like when I ended that relationship, got into a new one, went through that, broke up. And my last breakup was kind of like, I wanted to stay in the relationship, but he was just like, I can't deal with your fucking depression. Like, I don't want to do this. And it's funny how tables have turned, because now he's like always texting me and he's like, hey, what's up? And I'm just like, no, man, like, no. So I have all this shit on a hard drive and I really want to go to Netflix and just be like, you don't really have anyone that's put themselves out like that. And now, you know, it sucks that now people are like, oh yeah, I'm depressed. And it's like, cool.
I know. I don't want to make it a trendy thing. And I always have that struggle with this podcast that I'm like trying to jump on a bandwagon, which I'm not, because I'm so anti-bandwagon.
Yeah.
What was your intention when you were filming yourself? Were you thinking this could make a documentary?
Therapy
to go back and watch it and analyze it? Or
no, I just needed to talk to someone and I had no one to talk to, so I used
my laptop. You were talking at the camera. I was picturing like you had the camera from afar.
No.
And you were in the background. Okay. So you were legitimately talking to the camera.
No, it's like me having a conversation with myself for however long. You know, I remember when I hit like rock bottom that time when I didn't leave my place for a month. I have so many videos of me just like crying for hours. Just being like, I haven't left my apartment. I'm here by myself. I'm drinking wine. My friends are inviting me out. And I'm coming up with bullshit excuses not to go out and not to be social. To be honest with you, I can't wait to actually work on the film. But I hate the fact that it's just me, you know? Because, like, I don't want to make the documentary just about me. Because I feel like that's not very my character at all. And I wish I had more people that were vulnerable enough to be like, I go through the same thing, I'll start recording myself.
I'm sure you could find those people. And the amount of messages that I get, people get incredibly vulnerable. And of course, yeah, it's behind a screen with just words. You know, people aren't really sending me videos.
Yeah, but that's what I mean. Like, video is like very personal.
Well, I have had a couple moments. So on Patreon, if people do whatever subscription level, we Skype. And I have had a few people get super vulnerable with me over Skype. But I'm sure you could find those people.
And yeah, also, maybe I can do a casting.
There's so many aspects to depression that,
of course, I want to introduce it.
Of it. Your stuff could be 1/4.
Like, it could be like, it started because of the first video I ever recorded like 4 years ago.
Oh, I can see that. So was this documentary 34 pills?
32 pills.
32 pills, my sister's suicide.
Mm-hmm.
Was it all about the pills that her sister had been taking? What was it about?
Okay, so it's ironically a photographer.
Ah.
And it's her and her sister, right? And her sister was on antidepressants, I think, since she was like 13 or 14. So, and her sister, you know how like depressed people have tendencies of keeping diaries and like, just, I also keep all my empty bottles of pills as like an archive.
Pills?
Yeah.
Wow.
Because I want to know.
Throw them away so the evidence doesn't exist that I'm needing pills. Like, I'm like, goodbye with you. And like, I'm like, I hope someone in the garbage, or someone in the garbage. Yes, I have people in my garbage.
In the garbage.
I hope in the garbage, the homeless people looking through my garbage won't go, oh, Kristen Carney's on Effexor, blah, blah, blah. You know, right. And like, know that.
And I think that's why I keep them. Because also, like, I didn't want my old landlord to know that I was going through a difficult time in my life.
Yeah, it's like, no, I can still afford the rent, I swear.
It's fine. I've been living here for 7 years.
She's like, I don't want the ghost of your depression living in my apartment when you leave.
I'm like, bitch, it's staying. That's the beauty of it. When I left the ghost of my depression in there. So whoever lives in that apartment next,
You're fucking welcome.
I know. So many cupboards just being opened and slammed. Well, actually, like, no cupboards would be opened because my depression ghost is super lazy.
Yeah. Oh, my God.
Right? Would you ever get angry in your depression?
Yeah. I would break. I went through wine glasses like underwear because I would just throw them in the sink.
I go through underwear like once a month, so I don't really relate to that.
Ew.
I don't change them.
That's gross.
I'm just kidding. Actually, this morning when I woke up.
Don't lie to us. You don't have to save yourself from this.
This morning, my friend had her bridal appointment thing at like 10:15, and I woke up at like 9:55. And so I just threw on whatever clothes and ran out, but I had my underwear on from the day before.
Yeah.
And for the 2 hours we were walking around the city, I had the worst wedgie because they were stretching, you know, like they weren't fresh underwear. And it was the worst. And I'm like, I can't wait to change my underwear. I never wear thongs. Oh my God.
What?
It's like butt floss. Like I don't need my cheeks getting floss for 6 hours while I'm walking around. Not that I'm walking for 6 hours, but I'm so uncomfortable in thongs.
Wow.
Oh my God.
I can't wear a normal underwear.
Oh my God. No thongs. I would rather wear granny like, panties that fall out of my pants than wear thongs.
Now that's a damn look.
I know. Well, it's just like a safety precaution in case I ever go skydiving. I'll have a second shoe if mine doesn't open. My big underwear.
Survived. One day you're just like, fuck it, I'm gonna go skydive.
How amazing would that news story be though? That like woman survives skydive because of granny panties.
Iconic.
Thank you. I mean, really. I know.
I want to make
history. That's
great.
What I'm here to do.
So in 50 years from now, kids, you'll be in social studies class.
Or in 2 years because I'm currently wearing granny panties and I will always wear granny panties.
Yeah.
But okay. So the 32 pills,
mm-hmm.
her sister.
So
this is an elongated version of the schizophrenia
my life.
Segment. And your life.
So what happened was, I think she took 32 pills. She overdosed. She took 32 antidepressants or Xanax. I can't remember. I haven't watched it in a while because it reminded me too much of myself. And her sister like goes into like her storage unit and pulls out all the medication that she ever had. And it's just like a 4x5 table covered in like, ever since she was a little girl, like in all of her
so antidepressants.
Yeah, it's just, you know, but
when you can see things physically and tangibly,
I think that's why
really,
I keep shit.
It's a very arresting image.
Yeah.
To have all of the shit that has been put into your body or your loved one's body over the years, it really puts into perspective how sad it actually is.
I'm not going to lie. There's been times where I open up my medicine drawer and I'm like, because like I said, I keep my bottles and I'm just like, wow, mm-hmm. I've gone through a lot of medication, you know.
When Stevie passed away, I saw her medication.
Yeah.
And that was a very upsetting moment.
Did she keep hers?
I don't know if she kept hers so much as, yeah, she must have kept hers. I don't know which ones they were. I just saw the bottles
mm-hmm.
and that image was so sickening, and then seeing what pills left and which ones. And
can I just say something? Because okay, I started listening to the podcast before she passed, so when she did pass, it was almost like I knew her in a way because of the podcast. And I emailed you right when that episode aired.
Did I not respond?
No, you didn't.
Oh, I'm an asshole.
No, it's okay. I don't know if you even got it. It was like off your website. It was like some general email address, whatever. Okay, yeah. I get it. But I remember when I was writing the email, I was outside of my old apartment and I was smoking a cigarette, having a coffee, and a butterfly landed on my hand.
No.
I swear to fucking God. If you could dig up your emails from like a year ago, do it. And I wrote it to you. I was like, I'm sitting and a butterfly just landed on my hand.
Wow. Did you get this afterward? This tattoo afterward?
Yeah.
So for people listening, there's
I have a butterfly on my
tattooed
hand.
On your hand. I had no idea that was because of that. That's so amazing.
Yeah.
So with the drinking stuff, and then okay. We'll start doing some segments. So you said you've used alcohol as a way to calm yourself, and I mm-hmm. see that you're still drinking alcohol today and in this moment.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have a problem with alcohol, or is it under control and like you do it as a enjoyable activity in the moment today?
So I've gotten a lot better at it, and I think it's one of the things
someone I'm hanging out with, let's just say that, he doesn't really drink that much. And it kind of forced me to take back at my alcohol drinking, for sure.
It was a little bit of a mirror he shined at you, in a way.
Yeah, yeah. Well, today's Sunday.
Sunday's the day of rest, and rest also means enjoying alcohol.
Like, okay, don't get me wrong. Like, Monday through Friday, I'm working, right? So I definitely don't. Like, I'll have, like, a beer or two, or maybe a glass of wine or two before I go to bed.
Every night?
Very chill. Yeah.
What's crazy is that that qualifies as like a drinking problem.
And does
I'm not trying
it?
To tell you you have a drinking problem, but if you go to the doctor.
Has
you
know. The doctor lived in New York? And worked in the fashion industry?
No. I know. Come work my job for a day and then tell me what the standard is for normal drinking level. Hey, it's Kristen. I don't know who else it would be, but just wanted to tell you that I looked up on the National Institute of Alcohol Abuse and Alcoholism for drinking guidelines, and it says to have a low risk of developing alcohol abuse disorder. For women, it's no more than 3 drinks a day, and for a man, it's no more than 4 drinks a day, with a total of 7 drinks per week for women and 14 for men. It's a pretty big differential between men and women, but I wasn't too far off. Okay, bye.
Well, here's the thing. Like, I come from a European culture, obviously. My parents supervised me when I was underage drinking. They were very like, we would rather have you drink a glass of wine or have a beer in front of us when you're 16 than go out and fucking rage. I don't know. Like, I'm okay with it. Like, my dad drinks every day. It's a very, like, European thing to do, though.
Absolutely.
I don't know. It's definitely not American. And they're like, if you don't have 10 drinks a week, you're a fucking pussy.
But think about all the good that those couple drinks do for your mental health, though. If you're not abusing it, if you're relaxing and feeling happy inside.
Well, girl, I'm feeling great right now.
Yeah, those chemicals are so helpful for living a happy, long life. Like, so many people that live until they're 100, it always feels like they're like, well, I had like 4 drinks a day and I smoked cigarettes. And
well,
I
there
made
was
it,
like that one dude.
They just
that,
seem happy.
Yeah, there was that one dude in Russia. I can't remember his name, but there was like an article about him, and he was like, the first thing I would do in the morning was take 100 ml of vodka, chug it, have a coffee, go on with my day. Live to like 100 years old, 110 or something.
I always feel like I hear those stories. I mean, to use it as a coping mechanism obviously has its
I mean, I did that for a while. Yeah,
but
for
you feel
sure.
Like right now you're in a healthy space with it.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right, we're going to do some segments.
Let's do it.
Okay, so we're going to do antidepressant of the week. So what made you feel good this week?
Like, pill-wise? or like, in general?
More the organic route, even though I don't want to say that.
I'll be very open. I'm an open book.
Open pamphlet. There's not much to me, but I'm open.
Ooh, my
Just
book
kidding.
Is
I feel like I've said that before.
She's thick.
Good.
She's an Instagram model. You know, this week I finally had the courage to tell someone that I've been hanging out with. I finally built the courage when I was in LA, and I texted him and I was like, I really miss you. Like, I've really been thinking a lot about you. And the fact that he texted me back like this, and he was just like, yeah, me too. And I was like, oh my God.
That's a
so
good
that was
You're
like
on the same page.
Yeah, so that was like my high. But now I'm like scared that it's gonna hit a low.
It probably will, and that's life. You're always gonna hit a low.
Yeah,
but you just ride the high as long as you can, and then when the scary moment comes, it comes. But I think that's a really good sign, and I don't think you should worry yourself with anything.
So
at this
that
moment.
Was like my organic antidepressant.
Yay.
I guess. Yeah.
So what was your pill version of the antidepressant?
Zoloft.
Yeah. Yeah.
50 mils.
Yeah. Yep.
Yeah.
Totes with you on that.
Yeah.
All right. We're gonna do a who's sadder.
Yeah.
Segment, and you'll know the quote unquote people because they're groups of people and not a specific person.
Yeah.
Who's sadder, models?
Or photographers.
Or Instagram models.
Instagram models. I don't even have to think about that one. I think Instagram models, it's all about the content. And they're like constantly producing things. And I think when you're like an actual model, you don't really give a fuck.
But are actual models going extinct? Or are they being less appreciated? That's why I asked the question.
I don't think so.
Because I would think if I was modern day version of Christy Turlington, I would feel frustrated that I wasn't being appreciated to the extent that Christy Turlington would have been in the 90s in this era because of the way Instagram's changed everything. You know what I'm saying?
Well, that's kind of how I feel about photography. But I think at the end of the day, when you have an actual agency behind you and you're booking actual jobs and like this is your, like you're not getting paid to promote some fucking green tea or some fucking whatever, like some dumb shit. And also Instagram models, you're not really a model.
You're not.
I'm sorry. And maybe I'm being a snob because I come from the industry. And like whenever I see that shit on my feed that like comes up that are like Instagram models or Instagram makeup artists or whatever. And genuinely, I actually feel really bad for them.
I do too.
I feel really sorry for them, but I also feel very sorry for myself because,
me too.
And I'm going to say this because makeup company, and I'm a beauty photographer, makeup companies will pay $50,000 to $100,000 for these girls or men or whoever to post one thing on their fucking Instagram.
No.
And then I'll have a huge makeup company.
Huge.
And when I say huge, like if I said it, every, no matter what age gap you're from, you would
man,
fucking
woman.
Know. Yeah. They came to me and they were like, hey, can you shoot this advertising for us and we'll pay you $2,000 a day?
That's low, right?
Are you kidding me?
What should it be? I'm poor. I don't know.
It's not even that. It was almost kind of like,
it was insulting.
Yeah. It was almost kind of like, well, are you saying this? And here's another thing that I deal
with.
You
gave them a finger, right?
Oh, yeah. I was like, oh, if you don't
but
pay
me.
But you
put cover up on it and you drew little eyelashes on it and then you flipped them off of it.
I was like, fuck your mascara. No, but the thing is, when a makeup brand that big comes to you and you're the one that's doing their advertising pictures, it's like, why shouldn't you be paying me more than some social influencer? But the reality is they don't, and they don't want to.
So are
they won't
paying actual models less now than
they
would have before Instagram?
I don't know about actual model rates, to be honest with you. But I can tell you right now, to get paid $2,000 for a campaign for a major beauty
brand. Yeah, now
that
you say that, I can't believe I questioned if that was a lot or not.
That's barely rent in New York City. I hope they're
listening.
So
how did you respond? What was your
professional
response?
My response was, I won't take anything less than $20,000 for the day.
Wow.
And before everybody judges me and is like, who the fuck is this pretentious 26-year-old? I'm going to say I advised with an agent before I replied. And I was like, this is my lowest rate for this job. Yeah.
Well, good for you. And that's why you are where you are, which is doing very well at 26 years old because you have respect for yourself. And
yeah.
I need to do the same. And I'm going to do that right now by letting everyone know they can support the show for much less than $2,000 a day on Patreon. If you go to patreon.com/mentallychill, throw the girl $5. I've got lower
subscribed.
Standards.
Fucking do it.
I know
it.
You are subscribed.
Fucking do it.
So, yeah, get me like 1/1,000,000th of my rent for New York on Patreon by donating $5 a month. And
it's hard out here.
Oh my God, I can only imagine. Well, you know what? We'll end on that. I'll save this FDET shit for another episode. But this was really fun and I'm excited to come back to do more because there is so much darkness in your world that will light up mine.
Yes.
So I'm looking forward to that. And tell people where we can see your pictures and all that kind of jazz.
Oh, my name sucks.
Yeah, how do you say your last name? I'm like Kimchi. I just read it as Kimchi.
Oh my
like
God,
Korean,
that's what my
high
school teachers used to call me.
Really?
Yeah.
That's funny.
No, it's Kimmich.
Kimmich. Okay, you guys, thank you so much for listening and for supporting the show and for being amazing. And please rate the show 5 stars and check out Hannah. Check out Hannah's.
Hema. I can spell it if you want.
Yes.
HANNAHKHYMYCH. I'm sorry if that was really quick.
You just said that harder than it was to just spell it on your own.
Really?
You're like, HANNA.
Link in description below.
Yeah.
This is a YouTube video.
Look below, right below my boobs. So check out Hannah's photography on Instagram, and you can follow the show at Mentally Chill Pod on Instagram, which I never talk about. And you can also follow the show on Twitter at Chill Mentally. And your last assignment, please support the show on Patreon, patreon.com/mentallychill. Helps me keep the show ad-free, so there's nothing more annoying in the show than just me. So do that. Okay, I hope to see you there, and you know the deal. Remember, stay sad enough to listen, but not too sad. Bye, guys.